Nothing very representative group, not of Oxford or not of anything else.
these are Oxford.
And these are Cambridge.
Yeah, well,
in Oxford you can have a big lecture of fly over from the seas to speak to two students. And I'll be honest.
I'm not. I'm speaking about the call. Most of the people here are tame. They're not wild Oxford. It's tame Oxford. Don't you? Tamed. They're tamed.
Because we're all postgraduates.
Oh.
Graduation is the
just
postgraduate.
You have been exposed to Jewish affairs. It's not the first time that you saw a beard.
If it wasn't, I'd have left.
What? It's all kinds of. So you are not really wild. No, are just what are called team samples.
We can try to be.
What?
We can try to be wild.
What? Let me see. Let me see once. I mean, the only who? What university was? I think Cambridge had a better record in spying, wasn't
spying.
It? Yes.
Yeah. Spying who?
I think it was.
In recruiting spies.
Peterhouse.
I think.
Yeah.
Oxford.
Yes, but
I think.
Yeah.
I think that Cambridge was better at that. Okay, good. So Oxford is not even that. Okay, good. So.
So, should we have. Yeah, we'd like to open the floor to. Question. I think fundamental questions are science and religion. Free speech.
How long are we staying here? That's a small point. No,
15 minutes.
No, 15 minutes. So you want to speak about science, religion, free speech, eternity of the soul, psychophysical problem. What else? Only 15
relativity
minutes.
Of time. What? Relativity of the 15 minutes.
Evolution. That's about 15 minutes. Okay, good. So it'll have to be like what I call a shooting match. You take one shot, I take another shot, and you are killed, and we go further. Okay.
It's called fast dating, can you
what?
Say? It's called fast dating. Speed dating.
That's true. Okay, good.
So should we begin?
Begin.
I would like to take advantage, Rabbi Schneitzel, of having you here, to ask about something like the new Sanhedrin and whether you have a...
Nothing. Skip it. Okay. Nothing to do with the subject matter. Go on. Father. Point number two.
Can I go?
Yes.
In this century, what will be the challenges... in science, and what can be the common points where Torah and science can touch?
Well, I suppose the challenges will be. I think so. Again, so far there is a still stand. I don't know about physics. It seems that the cutting edge is in many ways is around biology. In one way or another. So it seems to be that this is now the cutting edge of science is now in biology. And so I suppose it will be. And it seems that these will be the challenges of tomorrow. To give you, one simple thing that this can happen in 10 years' time or in 5 years' time. Say, a good brain computer link.
Thank you.
So which may revolutionize our existence far more than whatever has been done before. I mean just imagine that you have unlimited memory almost unlimited memory and accessibility to everything. That can be a huge change, and we are not that far from it. That's what's frightening. And we are, of course, not far from many other things about it. So I'm saying, these are the challenges. Now, you see, one of the points, if to say again, I have to speak staccato and very fast. The point about Torah is mainly that we can say no. We can't say no.
Cannot.
We can. We can say no. One of the things is that, see, from our first father, from Abraham, that our ability was, the ability to stand against whatever it was, the trend, and to say no. In one way or another. Now, if we don't have it, and we try to find all kinds of ways of making ourselves easier, more accessible, softer, and so on, we lose everything. Truth, integrity, and even seriousness. So in many ways it is the ability to say no to lots of things that may happen. And many of things that do happen now. See, you mentioned there are all kinds of things. That one of the things is, if I am any kind if I represent anything like a personality or an opinion, it is one of the main points is the saying no. It is possibly what I think that Popper had in the time, what they call how you define. You define a scientific proof.
By negative proof.
What?
By negative
something, something that cannot be negated is not a statement. Now, if you cannot prove the other way around, that means, now in the same way, if we are dealing with anything, is the ability to say no. That's what I think the Torah will have to do. And it won't be easy because look, when you go to a university, and again, you go to a university, it is very hard not to become a part of it, and not to become a part of what we call the environment. And I wrote one of the books found here is about the special Jewish ability of being a chameleon. So we are in the worst danger. We tend very easily to blend in what I call not only in look by looks, but in minds with the society. So I am saying that what the Torah will have to say is to say no, lots of times. I know that's not popular. Okay, can I be even less popular?
Another first question, shall we try to concentrate more on healing diseases from a medical point of view or to improving the body and the mind?
Look, the problem about healing diseases is it seems that we are, I'm not sure, and that again, people have written about it, lots of things, whether we are on the winning side at all. I mean, the mutations among what they call bacteria and viruses are so fast that the question is, can we really catch up with them? I mean, that is one thing. Now, if we have the ability, and we surely don't have it because most of the money will be spent on frivolous things, whatever it is. So, but in a certain ways, can we create what they call a higher immunity for ourselves? Can we do something that will not only be a point of, say, can we change it, if I put it, can we change the relationship between us and the biological world strategically and not only tactically? Because what we are doing now is mostly, we are doing tactical changes mostly. We didn't do anything really deep and essential. So that is, I just don't know what we have in our hands now about, I mean, if we can do something that far reaching.
Stem cells. What's your opinion about stem cells research? And another point, 6 days of creation versus billions of years of, species.
There are two different questions,
right,
obviously. About the first question, basically, my point about biology is, about science in general, is that I'm for progress. I know that religious people are considered to be stuck in the mud, and possibly are. and they are always that what yesterday is always better than the day before. Yes, is always better than the day of today, and the day before yesterday is even better. Now I'm not like this for some freak. I'm a freak in that sense. So I believe in problems. I mean that things can be done. I'm just saying. Therefore, I think that basically this research of stem cells, I think, is basically it's a good research. I've been talking about it with a fellow who was the head of it in the American health system.
NIH.
Dealing with the fellow that was responsible for the president about it. My main point is that one has to be very careful. That's the main point.
What's the cutting edge when you are playing God?
No, that's what I'm saying. I have to be careful about trying not to do something that I don't know where it will end. I know that we don't know. That's one of our problems about playing God, is we don't know what the end is. But we can be very cautious. We can be very cautious. See, we, in a way, humanity contained up to a certain level the atom bomb, which means that we have enough killing power now to kill this world about 100 times over with the atom bombs. But we didn't. We stopped. Which was fear. Now I'm saying that about stem cell research, we should keep basically should be very much afraid. Afraid. Now, as I say, I'm for it on principle. I'm afraid of it because we are opening vistas into things that we don't really know where they're open, and we'll come into what I call practical as well as moral issues about it. All kinds of things may happen. Improved human beings.
The race.
What?
Improve the race.
So I'm saying the problem is that how improved? Yeah. See, will we be able, possibly we'll be able to change, to create more angelic people, but perhaps we will be able only to create worse devils. And that is really a matter of such a fine point about it. That's why I'm saying about being so very cautious. If you asked me about Torah, this is one of the things that one has to try to consult Torah about, how not to create more devils in the world than there already are. There are lots of them. But still, not to create new ones. So that is one question. About the other question, look. I'll give you an answer that will be very unsatisfactory for you and for most other people here and other places, for the rabbis, for other people elsewhere. Look, in many ways, one of the main points is that time has a meaning only when there are human beings there. When there are no human beings, time is an extrapolation. So when we speak about pre-human times, we are really speaking about something that's an extrapolation, which is, by the way, what I'm saying is not just that something that I just got off there. It has been discussed, this problem has been discussed many a time from a philosophical point of view. If time has any real meaning before it. So therefore, before a certain point, before humanity, any time is really meaningless. I can call it by any name I want. Because it will depend on my scale of reference.
So it's not 6 days as we count days today?
So, look, we can't. If you look at that, one thing is there, which is simple. The day that as we count days needs some way of counting it. Yes. Now the days that could be counted. Again, you may say as a point of belief that the 6 days of creations were the same kind of days. But the thing is in itself not only not provable, but is not even meaningful. A day is made by what we call move. You can measure time by movement of anything. When nothing moved, and nothing that is comparable to our notions of things moved. So the fact that you say that the day was an equal time is again, it's almost it's perhaps just a metaphysical statement. What is time without any way of time being measured? See? The first day, yes? Or the second day. You don't have anything that can measure time. And when you don't have anything that can measure time, so time is meaningless. So you may say, I believe that the 6 days are equal days. So it's a nice point. It's a good statement. And I can go with it. Or I can speak about times, which again is the same kind in a certain way, meaningless notions about time before any way of time calculation. As I say, there are extrapolations on both sides. And that's what my point about it is, that if you don't extrapolate, you have very limited amount of time that you can really discuss. And it would be a very nice question if humanity per se is the measuring god, or you need a way of measuring time in order to make time meaningful. And now I'm not trying to defend anything. I'm just trying to put points. I mean, how to say it? There's one beautiful thing in Oxford still. That's the little garden in which Alice used to play. It still exists in Oxford. So that's possibly one of the nicest and most intelligent things that they have there. What?
In which college is it?
It's on St. Aldate's, I think.
Yes, no, it wasn't his. It was what we call it was Liddell's. Liddell was in classic. He was a classical yes, I'm speaking about Liddell. I'm just saying that Liddell.
The father of Alice
was, he wrote something which is still considered one of the best, they are now renewing it from time to time, best Greek dictionaries that exists. It's what's called Little Scott Dictionary. And you are all of the on you of the sciences. But if you look, just consult somebody in the humanities and will tell you there's still a little. So this was the little of the story. And so I'm saying that some of the stories of Alice are really in the same kind of level. How do you understand anything? Okay. Any more questions, or you are dried up?
A new hot issue is climate change and global warming and the increase of natural disasters. Mm. And how does that fit in with the coming Mashiach?
Well, first of all, let me just say, had I known very, very well about the coming of Mashiach, when and how it happens, I wouldn't be spending or wasting time sitting here. I would take something, the best means of broadcasting, and tell it the whole world. See, it's sitting here is really seems nonsensical. If I had the real answer for it. Now, about the global warming. Let me just say, there's one thing. I'm not trying to be obscurantist, but one of the things that have to be somehow to be checked about it is how much has to do with any kind of natural cycles. I'm saying it because there are so many writings about it, and some of them are done by all kinds of there are so many biases in this world, in this way, that I'm not sure. I'm just speaking again, not because I don't have a vested interest in, I don't have any share in the diesel industry, not in the gasoline industry. Don't give me anything about it. But I'm just saying, incidentally, I don't know if you are interested. I suppose that now the statistics is that most of the, if there is any effect on the environment, which is created from the earth, is possibly due not to machinery, but to natural emissions from the animals. Didn't you read about it? Try to read about it. It seems that the animals, the cattle, pigs, and so on, are responsible for the majority of the what they call of the effects on the CO2 concentration. That's a funny thing because it puts things a slightly different way. But that's a fact. Now, just to make things better, I mean, as you don't know me, my opinions may be strange. My facts are usually right. So I'm saying, I'm wondering about what I call, how much is we know about cycles, big cycles of warming. There are the history of say the last four glass. Like a glacier or ages and so on, that are, they show that some of these things have nothing to do with our endeavors, and possibly they are due to bigger changes. See, it's wonderful to be like Al Gore. He was a great man, or he thought so. So he thought that he's relevant to change the world one way or the other. Possibly he's not. See, perhaps there are bigger forces in which they don't count Al Gore. I know that for Al Gore it's worse than a blasphemy. That there is some kind of a universe in which Al Gore is not counted. But still, that's about it. So I'm saying, I'm not. That was just a note about something about coaching, about getting too much involved in the thing, as it kind of becomes as many things becomes a point of belief, and you begin to believe in these things, and it becomes a fate in the global warming and so on. And so people pray to it and work at it, and it's not that important. So that's one thing. Now, and the other thing is, see, I don't know about coming of the Mashiach. Had I known, as I say, I wouldn't sit here. But in many ways, to put it in a very short way, it seems that coming of Mashiach is, or the idea is at least, connected with some kind of a crisis. See, that the coming of Messiah can be, in either way, it is connected with a crisis, and this global warming is a kind of a crisis, and it may become much bigger. So I'm saying that if one can speak about it as some kind of a sign, it is, there is a crisis in the world, and the crisis is in different fields. We can see an ongoing crisis which comes from as a result of many little effects that seem to be, and seem to converge. I would say, I don't know what point to converge, but they seem to converge in, I would say, in a rather closer time. It is not, see, in many years in the past, when we were speaking about Messiah in any rational way, and we can speak about it even in a rational way, it was something that the elements were too far removed. Now we are living in a play, in a time in which, see, my opinion is the coming of Messiah is always when there is some kind of a crack in the fabric of existence. It is a crack. And I see, it seems that there is a crack is coming one way or another. And that's why I'm saying that it seems that different things are converging. Global warming is one of them, but there are also other things that are converging. We have, except for global, we have, for example, a problem which is the lack of water. See, we can have all kinds of other ways of getting oil or getting what they call power, but we have less and less water for the world population. That's another element that goes in a different direction, but it's clearly there. And I can see many of these things coming to a head, not in a long time in the future. So possibly somebody has to rectify it. See? So that's what I'm saying, if there is any kind of a connection.
Do you think Jews should be more proactive in encouraging Goyim to observe the laws of Noah?
Jews should be
more proactive in encouraging Goyim to observe the Noahide laws.
Look, I think the Jews should do something about it, because in a certain way, again, for not just for our protection, which is perhaps of some importance. See, we need to live in some kind of an environment that is not completely and entirely antagonistic. See, when we see one of the points, I'm as most of the people that know me, not many of them here, when I come to America, they think that I am just hired by some foreign power to besmirch them, which I do all the time. I'm very offensive about Americans in almost every way. And so it becomes, it's true. I mean, it's true. The problem is the fact that I'm not given an order not to get to enter there shows how nice they are. But what I'm saying is, look, in a certain way, the environment there. America is still, whether I want it or not, is the most religious country, at least in the West. It is. And therefore, in some ways, it's easier for Jews to exist. So I'm saying that when, I can repeat it, I've written it in all kinds of newspapers that I don't read, but I've written it there for them. So that there is a continuous paganization of Europe. And this paganization of Europe is not healthy for us, because it's very far to keep our own existence with only reference points. So in that sense, I think it's, except for being a general duty that we have to do for humanity. But except that, I'm saying, even for self-protection, we need some kind of environment around us to be able to, I mean, to at least to understand us, to have a dispute with us. Because when we go into the real pagan society, I just said it today. It's a funny thing. Most of the Englishmen say, don't believe in Jesus. But they believe that we killed him.
Can I take the next question? I asked the professor in Oxford, does anybody believe that Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, wrote the Torah? And he said, if any student writes this in a paper, it'll be rejected. The paper will be rejected. Even the theory, as a theory, you know, because it's unacceptable today in academia that the authorship of the Torah was by Moshe.
Look,
what's your thoughts about biblical criticism?
Look, I'll give you two things. Two of them are, one of them is a general statement. Science, every time, especially today, when you have more newspapers and so on, has nothing to do with truth value. It is built very much on some kind of a consensus which is built on all kinds of strange things. I mean, you see, I don't know, there are not too many ladies here. So, and you possibly don't know about it. I happen to know about it, so I have the knowledge, but it's not usual. Look, changes in fashion. Yes, changes in fashion. Now, who triggers them? It's very interesting. You see, there was, for example, just to give you some at least something to remember what I. There was a few years ago, there was Gautier. You know the name?
Jean-Paul.
In fashion. I mean, if you are not interested in fashion, you don't hear this name. But it is in fashion. He decided to make a new fashion that is built on Haredi images. So he made the whole line of Strimlach. For girls, Strimler, long coats. I saw some of. I mean, he built that there were models and so on. Just imagine what would happen in the world. I mean, really, Strimler and Pears, only for girls, of course. It was for. So I'm saying, but it didn't. It wasn't accepted for some reason. No, I really don't know. It could be there are some of the what I remember. Some of the fashions of the time, some of them were so terribly ugly that I'm just wondering how could any sane girl dress like this. But seemingly they did. I can mention several things like this that were really atrocious. Okay, so what I'm trying to say is that the same way that leads fashion in this way is the same thing that leads fashion in universities. It's the same powers. They are, so to say, blind, what I call blind powers that move from one place to another. And therefore, what is what I call accepted and something that nobody dares to question in one time becomes unaccepted another time. I was once bumping in some university. Sometimes I happen to visit these places. So I was once in a university and I saw there at the door of some professor, I don't know whom, it was a long list of some of the most important inventions in the world, and against that was written when what was the time when they were condemned by the outstanding scientists of the time. I mean, almost every invention that you can ever mention was condemned as unscientific, impossible, and so on by the leading scientists of the day. So that should be, it was put there on the door possibly to make the student think. I don't know if it did, but it is there. So that is one point. Let me just tell you something else, which is, you can find it some places. It is seemingly something like a secret. Possibly in some articles about cryptography, perhaps. There is there is an interesting thing that which is a computer-based analysis of a text. They have something like this. It seems to be quite reliable, which is you put in a text to find out, for example, forgeries, which is are not. It is not checking. It is checking what they call very subtle changes of syntax, which usually a human reader won't detect. But it seems to be very reliable, and so it is used in different ways. A friend, an acquaintance of mine, older man, was a professor in the Technion in Haifa, and he was playing with that because it was more or less his field, so he played with that. Now, to make him doubly kosher, is a Jew, but. Except that is surely not observant by any means. So he's a kosher witness. So really not observant. And he, after he tried to put it to use, they did it. They put the Ilias in there, the Odyssey in there. They put all kinds of works of Shakespeare in there to find out what they call, for example, different authors of a text. So that was now what he did was something very strange. He did something which is the most important, most celebrated, most clear case of Bible criticism, which is the Book of Genesis. The Book of Genesis that has clearly to anybody's reading has at least three to four sources. You can see the J, the E, the P, and the R there very clearly. It's not if any of you is dealing with these materials, but that's it's so very clear. You can read it. I mean, you need to be blind not to see it. So, and he put a book of Genesis into the machine. And the result was that the book is written by a single author. See? Now, this should, I mean, had the scientists at the university, be honest people, if they would be honest people, they would feel really like being hit over the head. I mean, should be. I mean, because it is something, such a basic assumption of almost everybody that deals with the subject. And he was done by machine, not by human being that has his opinions. I mean, people may have their opinions and can see similarities when others don't see similarities and so on. It's a machine. The machine didn't care. And by the way, the machine wasn't very orthodox. I'm saying that's not very orthodox. It put, for example, a biblical book into it. The Book of Zechariah, and his result were that it was written clearly by two authors. So I'm just telling you that not the fellow is orthodox. Neither is what I call the system orthodox. But to do something like this to the Book of Genesis should have been a disaster. So what happened? It appeared. A small notice about it appeared, I think. Again, it's not my field of expertise, but
it was a miracle.
I got to know the fellow. I got to know the fellow by chance, because all kinds of strange, really strange stories that happened to me. All kinds of strange stories all the time. So I happened to meet him, and so. Okay, and so I got to know. So there was a small piece that appeared in one or two international magazines about it. But what was the result in the academia? They did the best thing that can be done. They just no reaction whatsoever. Nothing. nothing. It wasn't, if they would deny the validity of the research, saying that his, what I call, that it wasn't, the machinery wasn't good enough, that the system wasn't accurate enough, whatever it was, that would make a noise. So what they did was something which is, it's a miracle, because it was done, I'm sure there was no conference of Bible researchers on this at this point, but it seems that people work, that humanity has a tendency to work in a way that you can check. I mean, it's like, you know, one of the things that those, one of those unexplained instincts, when you sneeze, you always close your eyes. No way of avoiding it. So you don't have to learn it. You don't have to learn it as a boy. You don't have to learn it. And the only thing is that if you are driving a car, then it becomes dangerous, really. But the fact is that is it. So I'm saying people do it naturally, not because of any special reason. That is exactly what happens to academia. You have here something that should be a destruction of the very basic ground on which they stand. And the result there, I mean, I didn't see any article. Again, it's not my expertise, and if I say I didn't see, it means I didn't see. And I'm, say, well read, but not I don't know. There are so many things that I don't know that is too much to mention. So I'm saying I didn't see any kind of a criticism of it, just silence.
Maybe it's a new idea and it will take some time to be accepted.
Well, it is about 20 years. It's about 20 years.
Oh.
Einstein's theory also took some time. 20 years, I'm not sure. Look, I saw about it, as I said, the only mention that I saw was in some work on cryptography, in which he spoke about it, about the ways of deciphering all kinds of texts. And he put this, he mentioned also this, and he says very cautiously, there was something like this being done. We don't have yet enough responses to that. That's all.
What's the name for that?
What?
What's the name of the professor?
Radai.
He,
Radai. R A D A I.
That's his last name?
That's his last name, Radai. He was a professor in.
Computer science?
What?
Computer sciences?
He was a professor in the Technion, I think, in computer sciences. He later on taught some kind of Jewish studies when he became an emeritus, or whatever it is, but he was pensioned. He taught Jewish studies in some university in Germany. And I met him again with his... Again, I had a suspicion that is a non-Jewish girlfriend. I mean, he wasn't a youngster anyway, but I'm just telling you that he had... It was just a point that of his, just to tell you about what happens about...
Did it change his mind?
What?
After he saw the...
You see, it didn't change at least in... I mean... It was interesting for him. He was sure that he got that the facts are true, but it didn't have anything to do with his what we call practical behavior. I was again to mention just a nasty story. There was the story of the Bible codes. Now, I am slightly guilty of this thing. Slightly, because this fellow who wrote the book on the Bible codes, American, which has too much money, I suppose, or had too much money, he was bothering me like anything. he found out that I'm usually stay up very late, and he would phone about 2 o'clock a.m. to ask me questions. He has all kinds of theories in which he thought that I'm the only expert, theories about not just small conspiracies. Small conspiracies were too little for him, but what they call interplanetary, what they call conspiracies. How all kinds of external. He told me stories that he went, he asked the CIA, and then he went to Russia to ask the people there, and he found us that there's the waves of things that cannot be explained, and so he was searching for external powers, external malevolent powers that influenced the world. That was the guy. And he was phoning all the time. And he also came to visit me, which was... So I needed to defend myself somehow. So one of the things was that he mentioned that when he wanted to see if there is in the Bible any sources for this, in the Bible and the Kabbalah, any source of all these external powers. And so I didn't feed him food too much material, so it was a very disappointment. And so he was bothering more. And so he got into the... He asked me about the Bible quotes. And then I was glad enough to tell him that one of my friends, who is really top range mathematician, looked over some of the writings about these Bible quotes. And he thought that mathematically speaking, it's a good work done by Eliyahu Rips, whatever it is. Was also a good mathematician. And the man that vouched for him is really one of the great men of our time. Okay, so I told this guy, and he went into it, and became more and more and more involved into the Bible codes. He made lots of money of it. I asked him once, when he was just at the stages of the beginning, that's why I remember the story. I asked him, just imagine that you check it and you find that the Bible codes are indeed true. Will it do anything for you observing the Torah simply? He says, of course. Now, that didn't happen yet. And so I don't know if it has any connection with the things. I was speaking about it in Singapore, of all places. And I said that, and see, instead of going to all kinds of complicated codes, whether the birthday of so-and-so is really mentioned in that sense of the Bible, there are some very simpler codes, which are written, for example, don't eat this and this, keep the Shabbat. So they're simpler codes, and they can be used easily without it. Now, I don't know, somehow it wasn't so popular.
Sorry, the rabbi has to leave.
Well,
so
take a final question.
Final question.
Okay.
I'll ask you a question about drug
He's
usage.
He's a rabbi at Cambridge University.
What? About?
Drug usage. It's known that I remember seeing a question someone asked you once about why no longer there's a picture of you smoking a pipe on the back of your books, how things may have changed. And
it's not my fault. I have a pipe in my pocket.
So maybe it's that.
What's in the pipe?
obviously, there's an issue of legality and everything, but from a more moral, I'm not saying moral perspective, when we look at different chemicals in existence, why is it, what are the arguments for and against do you think a person should utilize? So, as I say, I'm in Cambridge University, so you have people who take drugs and things. What's the argument? So you drink a lot of alcohol, and I take a lot of this, and I take a lot of that. So legally,
I don't see. Look, basically, I don't see any real difference between taking any alcohol is a kind of a drug, in the same way as the other drugs. I mean, how is it called here? Marijuana, hashish, how is it called? Grass. What's the local name here?
Mexico.
What?
We use them all.
I thought that you have some kind of an English way of saying it. Okay. Anyway, I don't see any basic difference about it. And basically, I would say that all drugs of all kinds is, that's, if I may say so, just that was one of the things that I heard from the Lubavitcher Rebbe in a meeting that I never spoke about it, so you have the excuse of hearing it. He was talking with me about that, and he had, which people didn't know it, he had also a great sense of humor. People don't usually connect it with him, but he had a real sense of humor, and he didn't use it when speaking to the say 5,000 people listening. It would be wasted on them. But in private, he used it. And I remember once, there were all kinds of things that he said to me that were clearly but he was speaking of a person that was taking drugs, and he was making what he called. He was very careful, incidentally, never to say anything bad about anybody. But sometimes he make a little joke about it. So anyway, he said basically that, he says, the notion of the Torah is general, that the person should be the master. And anything that the person is enslaved to is wrong. So that was the point. So the point is not the difference between smoking, drinking alcohol, smelling all kinds of, say, cocaine, heroin, and so on, or injecting them, is basically the same. Can I be still the master? If I can, then it's a usage, and it should be taken carefully, what can one do with them. And sometimes some of the care is, I don't know if you read such books, there was once the books very, very well written by Huxley, the Gates of Perception,
Doors of Perception
and Gates to Heaven and Hell. Say, very well written, incidentally. He wrote many books that were not so as well written as that. But some of his novels are interesting, but not as well written. I mean, in the way of, say, I speak professionally as writing, but his biggest mistake about the books was, and this is, he believed that in his case, Mescaline opens gates to something objective. He thought that the Mescaline opened the way to see higher worlds. Basically, I think that was the basic mistake, was that the drugs open gates, no gates, and create new perceptions. But the gates are inner gates, which means the open gates into see parts of your own psyche. You don't see, when you see the beautiful descriptions of how a person taking mescaline, looking at a chair and seeing it as a whole of Ezekiel's chariot. See, that is not something that you see. Something that is outside. It's something that you see. It's an inside experience. Interesting, but it doesn't go beyond the subjective mind. So I'm saying that the problem about using any kinds of drugs, and in a strange way, almost everything has a little bit this quality. Everything has this quality. We cannot have, we don't really have, or hardly ever have, something that has a we speak about the about materials that have that are psychoactive. Almost everything is psychoactive, including bread. No, you can see it by experience. Try to be hungry for a day, and you take a piece of bread, and you see how it how many changes are made in your psyche from eating this piece of bread. I mean, it's a simple experience. Everybody can make an experiment like this. So I'm saying, basically, I don't see any big difference. I'm saying the problem is with most drugs, what you call drugs, the problem is that people come to a point, come relatively fast to a point of no return, or practice. I mean, there's no point of no return, to a point in which is hard, is very hard, almost impossible to make a return. So a person loses what I call the ability to control anything, and that I think is the wrong side of it. Otherwise, anything is, in a way, somehow addictive. People are addicted to what not. It's not even a meat. It's not even a meat. The early Hasidim, there is a paper written by Steinschneider, which is called the tobacco worship among the Hasidim, which is true, because from the Baal Shem Tov on, many of the Hasidic leaders were smoking. Many of them were smoking for a long time. But
smoking what?
Smoking tobacco.
Tobacco.
Oh. Tobacco. Not, you know, I was once walking in the street of New York in the middle of a parade, a Puerto Rican parade, and I'm smoking a pipe, and some of the fellows just encounters me and says, What are you smoking? I told him exactly what I'm smoking. It's just a small weed. So your reaction is about exactly the same, even though you are not possibly a Puerto Rican. Anyway, I'm just saying that about tobacco, it is true. All the rest, and I think that people managed to send me huge amount of nonsense. I'm a recipient of so much trash that it's almost impossible to believe. So much trash, and I saw some trash along these lines, but part of it, I mean, the only defense that I can give to the writers of such trash is they were possibly smoking pot when they were writing it.
Well, I'd like to thank Rosh Steinsaltz for his generous time.
Yes, okay. So I hope nobody was killed. Okay, good.